Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Ben Coleman, president of Aerospace Management System Institute in Lakeland, Florida, who is today's host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 48th Annual Sun and Fun International Expo here in Lakeland Linder International Airport now, no longer regional. And this is always a pleasure. I'm Ben Coleman, one of your hosts here for the Florida Aviation Network, live and in the clear, coming to you from the Central Florida Aerospace Academy. And that's across from the Aerospace Center for Excellence. I think I've hit all the marks of who I'm supposed to discuss with, of where we are, who we are, but not why we are. And they're here for aviation safety. That's our passion. That's what drives us at the Florida Aviation Network. And trying to get the word out to help our accident rate, help reduce the accident rate. And we do have, this is a volunteer organization, got Jack, Andrew, and we got Bob. And remember, the FAA is always watching. Matter of fact, camera three. Sorry, I had to do that. FAA's always watching, but no, they are. And this is a snicker thing. Before I introduce our guest, everybody snickers. I'm with the FAA. I'm here to help you. Oh yeah, that's a big joke. No, it's not. They are really here to help you. If you work with the system and you show a compliant attitude, you're going to be okay. If you're trying to skirt the system and work outside of the standards, which they call regulations, we're going to get you, or you're going to get yourself, or worse, hurt somebody else. So let's keep that in mind as we talk safety. And one man that I know that is, he's all about safety, and his operation is just the epitome of a safely run operation, Mr. Larry Kelly. Larry?
My friend Ben.
And welcome.
I don't want to hit on what you just mentioned there about FAA. You know, I've heard all the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last several years, I've had a whole lot more close contact with working with the FAA on getting exemptions to do flight training in experimental category airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
For our flight training program we do in limited category airplanes, as well as a program we do for just sightseeing rides. And I tell you, you're absolutely right on. You show a compliant attitude and want to do it right, they're out there and they do everything they can to help you.
Mm-hmm.
They're not out there trying to get you. And what my experience has been, they find a little flaws here, little flaws there. There's always going to be something to find. They just help you with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not out there trying to get you.
Mm-hmm.
So the worst thing somebody could try to do is try to hide something. You know, if you have a problem or an incident or something, fall on the sword and say, hey, I messed up. And you're most likely going to come out of it smelling like a rose.
Yeah. And again, every now and then, Larry, you're going to find that errant inspector that either trying to make a name for themselves or
really
don't know exactly what they're doing. Call them out on it. I mean, because they are public servants.
Just recently I had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that they're really the exception.
Yeah.
And what I found just from at Warbird Operators Conference down in Corpus Christi, just a few weeks ago, I was talking with one of the hierarchy within FAA,
mm-hmm.
and that's one thing we were actually talking about. They want to know,
mm-hmm.
when they have inspectors, mm-hmm. that are crossing that line,
mm-hmm.
and trying to make up some of their own rules, those kind of things, and they deal with it internally. They very much try to deal with that. So I've been very impressed in the last 10 years with all the work that I've had to do with FAA, you know, the living history flight exemptions and et cetera, they really are a good group.
Well Larry, it's a matter of interpretation. And when somebody asks me to interpretate a safe run operation, I try to steer them toward Panchito.
Well, I appreciate that.
And tell us a little bit more about what Panchito is doing. And I think we even got some B-roll. You have helped out so many people taking that airplane and exercising it and getting it out, and it's just a tremendous flying machine.
Yeah, I have I just passed a little over 2,400 hours of command pilot time myself in the B-25, and doing many things. You know, for the past 25 years, we've been involved in all the Doolittle Raider reunions, the gatherings. You know, I organized the largest gathering of B-25s publicly since the end of World War II. And that's when we got 20 B-25s to come to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and land. The Air Force resurfaced the old Wright Field runway so we could bring 20 B-25s in there to recognize the Doolittle Tokyo Raiders. And but you know, the flight school now, we're introducing a lot of people now on to fly the airplane. Mm-hmm. Some people come and want to go through the training program because they just want to know what it's like to experience it. And then others because they want our training program does have the reputation for doing it right and being comprehensive. It is not paper compliance. It is not pencil compliance. If you don't meet the standard, it don't go on your ticket. Mm-hmm. But if you do meet the standard and it goes on your ticket, you're going to be safe in that role that you've just achieved, you know, with the airplane. And we run that program several times a year, obviously not every weekend. We spend, somebody asked me, how much time do you spend on maintenance versus flying? Well, the last time I tracked it, we were about 400 to 1 maintenance hours to flight hours. And it's going to be a whole lot higher than that this year because we've had to do some extra work. We had to change an engine. And with that, you know, if you're going to be changing an engine, well, you want to put in new motor mounts, and you want to do this, and you want to do that, and you want to. So we did a whole lot of extra stuff. We upgrade. We finally bit the bullet and upgraded the instrument panel. Built our own instrument panel. Upgraded the avionics. Garmin. You know, everything turns on, lights up when you flip the switch. So you haven't seen that yet, I don't think.
No, sir, I haven't.
But love to show it to you.
Well, last time we flew that airplane, it had a little 496 up. Stuffed in the panel.
Yeah, it was. I think it was Velcro.
It might have been Velcro, but it's kind of a horse race because if you haven't noticed, Larry, I'm getting older.
I'm way ahead of you.
Okay.
My next one is 75.
Wow, that's almost a century. You're coming up. That's you're getting close.
Yeah, well, ibuprofen helps.
I thought you were going to say Viagra there, but I...
Well, no, I'm a pharmacist, you know, okay. So I keep it...
Larry, we're... I would like to... And there for a while, I was like 4, maybe 5 hours away from getting my type. As soon as I get... I'm sporting a new knee, total knee replacement. As soon as I get that leg working back, I'm going to sell some of my toys, and I want to come up, and I want to finish this off.
Well... We'd be happy to do that. You know, like I said in a recent piece of correspondence, and I was telling the lady outside, you know, earlier when we came in, you're probably not just tooting this because, you know, this is your horn here, but you're probably one of the most natural pilots. We got in that airplane that day when I needed a co-pilot one time. You remember that? What was that, 20 years ago, 18 years ago, something like that?
And
I said, Ben, can you fly with me? You're multi-engine rated, right? So, well, we got to move the airplane. And we get Ben in the airplane, who goes out, and the airplane gets the three best, smoothest landings it had seen since I'd been flying it. And I said, you don't need any more instruction. We went over and did briefings on emergency procedures and safety procedures and
fuel systems.
And yeah. Off we went. Yeah, so.
You left out the key component. And I will never, this is one of those things, I even put it in my logbook. You said, if you can get me to the end of the runway, will continue.
Yeah, and I remember
you didn't think I could do it.
You did it very well. See, the one thing people need to understand, a B-25 does not have a steerable nose wheel. And most pilots develop this muscle memory of using the brakes then to steer. So you got an air commander out there with a free casting nose. Well, you just use the brakes. You got Cleveland brakes, you know, so they dissipate heat quite well. B-25 doesn't. The wheels are magnesium. The brake packs are magnesium. And each brake pack has 14 rotors and 15 stators, and there's 2 brake packs in each wheel. So now you got 14 and 14 is 28 added up. You got 56 rotating rotors, and they're metal to metal, and they're embedded inside the wheel. Look at a B-25. The brake is not outside the wheel. It's embedded inside the wheel. So every time you're touching the brake, it's heat, heat, heat. And one B-25 operator found out the hard way just a little less than 2 years ago, and actually had a brake catch on fire. It got so hot
that
the 5606 spontaneously combusted, and they had a fire right under 500 gallons of fuel. So what, you know? They'll overheat. So you can't taxi it using the brakes. You got to taxi this airplane with a free casting nose wheel by using differential power and keeping a rudder, because you got a rudder in each slipstream. So you need to turn right, full right rudder, bring up the left engine just a little bit, let that engine pull you through, and just before you get there, reverse the rudders, bring up the other engine just a few hundred RPM, pull it back, brake it, and after a while you just get to be a master, just like Master Ben here.
It is a dance, but it's
but it
rudder,
will keep
power,
your attention.
Brakes.
Yes,
rudder,
it will keep your attention.
Power, brakes, rudder,
and, you know,
power, brakes.
And I had to tell a story one time because this was probably the most unlikely as far as estimating. We had a flight at a Naval Test Pilot School, and I had a student that was flying with me that time. She was a combat veteran, F-18 pilot from Desert Storm, and we had to find cushions. And I said, how did we get her where she could reach all the pedals? And right out of chocks, I never could have done that well. I never done. I couldn't taxi that well now. And right out of chocks, she taxied the airplane like she'd been in it all of her life. Mm. Call sign Duke. Mm-hmm. She went on to become a qualified test pilot on the F-35, married, had a child, came back into the test program, became an astronaut, and now is designated to be the test pilot on Boeing's new space capsule.
I'll be darned.
So we taught her everything she knows.
And I tell you, she can handle, and I'll throw this out there. If anyone has the interest, desire, and it's financially it's attainable, but
sure.
You need to get in touch and just go, just Google, I guess, Panchito.
Well, you can do that at DelawareAviationMuseum.org. Really, it's DelawareAviationMuseum.org. Just up, and if you find flaws with the website, folks, I'm sorry. We just brought it up yesterday, the new website, and we're still working out a couple of small bugs on it. But or you can call his phone number right on the website, and you can call and talk to Bill, and we can get you scheduled.
Well, and this is in Delaware.
Yep, we're in Delaware. We got ideal airspace there. We don't have any Class B airspace anywhere around. Don't have any Class C airspace around. Even Northrop Grumman comes and works in our airspace doing some of their research, because we've got that perfect little area of just clear airspace where we can work without having to worry about a whole lot of transients and a whole lot of control. Unless President Biden is going to his beach house. And then we have to depart the area and go to another airport and operate for that weekend.
How are we doing maintenance-wise? Are engines healthy? Everything going
good? Oh, yeah, running great. We were at Shaw Air Force Base last weekend, flew demos there in the air show. I had to tell you a funny little story. I had a number of people kept walking up and tapping on the plexiglass nose. You know, well, I wanted to know what you can't just see it unless you can't just see it. You know, they got to tap on it to see what it's made out of. So I got a little annoyed. I made a little cardboard sign. And it said, please do not tap the windshield. The airplane is old and the owner is old and grumpy. It's a joke, you know. Mm-hmm. And I stuck it out with two little pieces of Gorilla Tape. I forgot to take it off when I went and flew my demo. So I'm flying my demo 250 mile an hour, and we're yanking and banking. If you've ever seen my demo, you know, we show everything a B-25 can do. Mm-hmm. We come back in, taxi in, it's still stuck up on the nose of the airplane. So, well, that's a great ad for Gorilla Tape. It didn't blow off.
Well, and you mentioned yanking and banking. And I think, if I remember correctly, I went down and flew the Punta Gorda air show with you. Mm-hmm. And we went out, and I think we took a press flight. Mm-hmm. And it was a great experience. But that aircraft is, you can do more within the confines of the airport boundary than people realize for a big old heavy airplane.
Well, I was flying one day, and it was a very well-known Warbird fighter pilot. Said he could get on my tail real easy, and he had a difficult time getting on my tail because I could turn inside him until he finally remembered to pull the power back and decrease his turn radius.
But it's a little heavy on the controls.
When I finish a demo, I feel like I've just, you know, it's an 11-minute demo, and you'll see I'll fly tomorrow in the air show, I'll fly Thursday in the air show. And when I finish that demo, I have to sit in the cockpit for a few minutes because I'm exhausted. It's like getting on working out on a weight bench with a football player, trying to keep up with a football player.
It'll work you.
A handful.
It's a good thing you're a scrappy young man and you can work out every morning.
Yeah.
Run 5 miles and swim a mile and anyway.
Yeah, who are you talking about? Somebody else must be here.
Larry, tell me about the 80th anniversary.
Yeah, that's something that's really important. That's something that's been a passion for me. You know, I was made an honorary Doolittle Raider shortly before Dick Cole died, and I've been involved with the Doolittle Tokyo Raiders for 80 years. And you know, and the more I was around those men, the more I became more respect I had for those guys. You know, when it was almost going to be certain death, and it was not a suicide mission, as you hear some people say. The original plan was to take off, bomb Tokyo, Yokohama, Kobe, you know, a total of five cities, recover in China, refuel, re-oil, fly on up to Chongqing, and the airplanes were going to be turned over to Chenault and the Flying Tigers, and the crews were going to be shipped home. That was the original plan. The Beacon didn't make it there. They had to launch early. Now they're going to be arriving in China at night. It was in a storm. I had someone send me an email the other day. Well, if they'd have just feathered one engine and flown on one engine, they could have extended the fuel and wouldn't run out of gas. They didn't run. They wound up having enough gas. They all made the area. They couldn't find the airfield because the Beacon never made it there, and it's the middle of the night and storming, and there was no lights. Could you find it? No. But we're coming up. April 18th is the 80th anniversary of 80 men, 16 airplanes, you know, and a commitment that became legendary, probably one of the most famous raids in the history of aviation. You know, at the time, Yamamoto was wanting to take Midway, and the Japanese Army would not go along with it. And so, you know, the attempt to take Midway was not going to go without the Army. And Doolittle's men attacking the mainland, the Army decided to go along with Yamamoto. And the very poorly planned mission to take Midway, of course, failed. Three aircraft carriers, three of the Japanese carriers were sank that morning in June, and then one later that evening. The Japanese lost the cream of their crop, you know, all because of the Doolittle raid. They changed the course of the war in the Pacific. And so now the last raider has died. You know, the Doolittle Raiders now have passed into history. There are no more. So it's up to you, me, and everyone else to continue to tell the stories and to keep their memories alive of what they did, all volunteer mission. And the other, you know, the 345th Bomb Group, the 340th Bomb Group, all the other young men that had volunteers, no one was ordered to go into the skies in World War II. Every airman was a volunteer. And when they were losing 20-30% on some missions, living in squalor, to get up and do it again the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Go into theater with 300 men in your outfit, come out of theater with 56 men left in your outfit, and still keep going. Dedication. Those kind of losses, you know, and right now, you know, if any World War II veterans are still alive, they're all in their 90s. You know, they're the little old white-haired men that everybody gets annoyed with out driving on the street or walking down the sidewalk really slow. They should be stopped and thanked. So, yeah, this year, the 80th anniversary, 80 men, 16 airplanes, it's really special.
Well, let's keep that going, Larry, and that these aircraft, they don't maintain themselves. Some of these parts are getting hard to find, and you got to make them if you can't find them. And I know that the effort, you have started an awful lot up at your operation in Delaware.
Well, we have a tremendous core of volunteers. You know, if you're going to have an airplane like this, you can't do it. I don't know if anybody can afford to pay people to do this anymore. You've got to have a good core of people who share your vision, who share your respect for history, who share your respect for those that took them into combat. And today, ever since, you know, this war going on in Ukraine, I think people are sort of looking around and taking a second look at those that wear the uniform.
Well, that's all we can do from our position is wish them well, support them as best we can, and keep this alive, keep it rolling. And airplanes like Panchito, there's a lot of warbirds out there that I don't know of any that are as well maintained as yours.
Well, they're
at varying degrees, but
most warbird operators are out doing it not for the ego of it, but out of their tremendous respect for the veterans that took these aircraft into combat. I think very few people I know that's out there doing it for the ego, and they don't last very long because they are shunned by the rest of the community very quickly.
Well, and we, it's self, it's a very self-policing industry that we have.
In becoming even more so.
Yeah.
You know, after a very well-publicized accident here a couple of years ago, much more so self-policing. Yeah. It was an eye-opening event for a lot of people to, when you recognize something, open your eyes and say something. And that has become much more the standard nowadays.
Well, it's unfortunate that it took an episode like that to bring it to the forefront, because it's kind of permeating kind of in the bottom, but it brought it up, and we learned from it.
Warbird Operators Conference just a few weeks ago out in Corpus Christi, the best attended conference yet, and the entire weekend we're talking about maintenance and safety, safety of flight, safety of passengers, mm-hmm. Safety of operation, doing it for the right reason, doing it right, being compliant. Mm-hmm. And it was really refreshing to see this group of people so totally focused on spending all of their personal resources to be able to do this, mm-hmm. and keep this thing called Warbirds of America, keep it going.
Well, Larry, I would like to share with you something in the future about my safety management system program, mm-hmm. that you will enjoy, you will like, you will embrace it, you will like it, you will like it.
Yes, sir.
And the another thing, someday we're going to go out and play some golf, because I can putt. I am a putter.
I know you got one hell of a putter.
I got one nice putter. Yeah. I really do. But
does anybody know that story?
We're going to have to catch it next time, because either that or at the bar. I'll see it at the QB hut. We'll talk about it there.
We'll talk about it at the QB hut, yeah. I still owe you for that putter.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
It's always good to see you and talk with you here on the Florida Aviation Network. I'm Ben Coleman, one of your hosts here, and this is the 48th annual Sun & Fun International Expo. We'll see you next interview.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.